So I want you to imagine, just for a second, that you are standing in the middle of a massive server farm.
Oh, wow. Okay. Loud.
Right. You're surrounded by these towering industrial racks. You're getting deafened by the cooling fans. And the whole place is just churning through, I mean, literal megawatts of power.
Just to run, like, a complex physics simulation or render the lighting for a digital world?
Exactly. Now, I want you to imagine taking all of that immense computational throughput, just shrinking it all down and cramming it into a, well, $400 box.
Sitting right in your living room.
Sitting in a living room, yeah. And maybe even in a heavily sanctioned country where top-tier silicon is basically treated like contraband. As of last night, that's no longer a hypothetical scenario.
No, it is absolutely real. We are looking at what is essentially the total collapse of the traditional hardware barrier.
Welcome to today's deep dive. It is the morning of March 15, 2026, and we've got a massive stack of independent reports. We've got IDC and Counterpoint research data, plus all the official industry announcements detailing exactly what went down last night.
Yeah, and it was a busy night.
It really was. Over the course of just a few hours on March 14, six completely separate announcements dropped. That essentially, I mean, they rewrote the foundational rules of the tech landscape.
They did?
So our mission today is to connect these dots for you. We aren't just going to sit here and read you press releases. We are looking at a massive paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Basically the death of brute force computing.
Yeah. And if you look really closely at the data we have here from the GDC announcements and these market reports, a very clear thesis starts to emerge.
Right, yeah.
That the future of technology, it just isn't about fabricating bigger, hotter, more expensive pieces of silicon to stick under a desk anymore.
Right, the giant PC tower is kind of a dinosaur now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's really about unparalleled architectural efficiency. It's about making absolute high-end experiences universally accessible and, you know, completely decoupling the software capabilities from the physical hardware that you happen to own.
Okay, so let's look at how that decoupling is actually hitting consumer hardware first. Specifically, I want to start with virtual reality.
A huge leap there last night.
Right. Because if we look at the GDC 2026 data, the physical boxes we've always relied on to run VR are just being bypassed entirely. NVIDIA just announced GeForce Neta VR.
Which is wild to actually see in practice.
It is. For the first time ever, they're officially pushing 90 frames per second cloud VR gaming directly to headsets like the Apple Vision Pro and the Meta Quest.
Bypassing the local PC render pipeline entirely?
Completely bypassing it.
And, I mean, anyone who follows spatial computing knows that pushing standard flat-screen games from the cloud is one thing, but VR is just a completely different beast.
Because of the motion to photon latency.
Dude, that's it.
Exactly. The human vestibular system is just ruthlessly precise. If your eyes see a turn in the headset, but the fluid in your inner ear registers the motion even a fraction of a second later, your brain basically assumes you've been poisoned.
It assumes a physiological mismatch and triggers simulator sickness.
Bam, you're nauseous.
Right. And that is exactly why local rendering was always considered non-negotiable for high-end VR. You simply couldn't, you know, buffer your way out of head tracking.
Yet, looking at the IDC reports here, they confirm that NVIDIA has somehow managed to get latency down to sub 20 milliseconds.
Which is the magic number.
Yeah.
That is the biological threshold where the human brain just stops perceiving the delay.
And they're doing this by leveraging predictive rendering at edge servers and integrating directly with local headset telemetry. So they're feeding 90 frames per second over standard connections.
It's incredible. And they are backing it up with serious software, too.
Oh, yeah. They're launching with native support for incredibly demanding titles. I'm talking about Control Resonant and Samson. Tendleston story.
Massive games. Plus, they rolled out this new game discovery system and cross-platform account linking, so your existing PC libraries are just immediately accessible in the headset.
I think Jeff Fisher, NVIDIA's GeForce Now director, put it best when he stated that they have erased the boundary between local and cloud gaming in VR.
But you know, what strikes me isn't just the technical bypass of the local GPU, it's the global geopolitical impact of this.
Oh, absolutely. The Counterpoint data highlights this perfectly, especially regarding markets with severe technology import limits.
Like Iran, for example.
Yes, in countries like Iran, acquiring a top-tier physical GPU is a complete logistical nightmare. It's heavily restricted due to sanctions, and it's prohibitively expensive due to currency devaluation and massive import taxes.
So basically inaccessible for the average person.
Exactly. But GeForce Now WVR completely democratizes that compute access. A user in a restricted market now has the exact same 90 frame per second spatial computing environment as someone sitting next to a, custom-built liquid-cooled rig in Silicon Valley.
The local hardware bottleneck just vanishes into thin air.
It really does.
But bypassing the hardware via the cloud is only one approach we saw last night. In that exact same evening, Microsoft stepped onto the stage and effectively ended the traditional console war.
By announcing Project Helix.
Yes. Asha Sharma, the new Xbox CEO, she billed Project Helix as a premium gaming PC architecture built explicitly for the living room.
And this is really where the strategy shifts from bypassing hardware via the cloud to essentially swallowing entire ecosystems locally.
Because Project Helix is definitely not a walled garden.
No, it runs Xbox, Steam, and GOG natively right out of the box.
Which is crazy to think about for an Xbox. And they said alpha dev kits are shipping to studios in 2027, and the hardware outputs 4K resolution at 120 frames per second using their proprietary ML-based upscaling.
It's a powerhouse.
It is, but okay, let's unpack this for a second. Sharma explicitly said they are changing the rules of the game and stepping out of the console war. I kind of have to push back on her framing here, though. Well, if Project Helix natively runs Steam and GOG, aren't they just, building a very user-friendly PC and surrendering to the open market? Like, how is giving up the walled garden and innovation? Aren't they just throwing in the towel?
I get why it looks like that, but it only looks like a surrender if you are measuring success by old traditional console metrics. Uh-huh. What Microsoft is actually doing with their Unified GDK, the game development kit, is an incredibly aggressive consolidation of developer power.
Walk me through the mechanics of that, because I'm not sure I see it.
Think about the traditional software development pipeline. Studios historically had to build a game optimized for the rigid, unified architecture of a PlayStation or an Xbox.
Right.
Then they essentially had to rewrite and reoptimize the entire memory management and draw call pipeline for the endless, fragmented permutations of PC hardware.
Because every PC has different graphics cards, different RAM, different processors.
Exactly. It is like writing a massive, incredibly complex technical manual in French and then having to completely restructure and rewrite it in German just so a different audience can read it.
Which takes years and millions of dollars.
Exactly. But the Unified GDK acts as a universal root language. Developers write the code once, and the Helix hardware natively interprets it alongside Windows 11 without requiring a bespoke port.
Ah, I see. So Microsoft isn't surrendering to the PC market. They are absorbing it.
Precise.
They are merging the massive Windows 11 audience with the traditional Xbox audience, forcing competitors like Sony to defend a closed, isolated ecosystem against a living room box that has, native access to 30 years of open PC gaming history.
Plus Game Pass.
Right, plus Game Pass.
Yeah.
All running without those optimization bottlenecks. It's like finding a skeleton key that unlocks every digital storefront at once.
They are actively dismantling the software boundaries that dictate what hardware you have to buy.
Okay, so if Microsoft is restructuring the ecosystem that delivers these digital worlds, the announcements regarding graphics architecture completely disrupt how those worlds are actually rendered.
And critically, who actually controls the silicon?
Yes, because NVIDIA didn't just talk about cloud VR last night. They also announced the March 31 rollout of DLSS 4.5 for their upcoming RTX 50 series cards.
Bringing full-scale path tracing to real-time gaming.
Which is huge. Anyone familiar with rendering technology understands how computationally crushing path tracing is.
Oh, it's brutal on a system.
Simulating the exact physics of light, tracking millions of virtual photons as they emit from a source, bounce off a puddle, refract through a glass window, and hit a camera lens. That traditionally required whole server farms rendering cinematic frames over hours.
Yeah, doing it in milliseconds during active gameplay seemed physically impossible just a generation ago due to the sheer heat and power required.
Yet Jensen Huang was up there claiming they are delivering Pixar-level quality in real time. And the showcase for this was that mega geometry foliage system debuting in the upcoming Witcher 4.
Unbelievable demo.
We are talking about rendering millions of individual leaves with perfect light bouncing off every single blade of grass entirely dynamically. But here's the thing. What I really don't understand is the underlying math here.
The frame rate boost.
Yes. The reports state DLSS 4.5 actually grants a 40% frame rate boost while running these path tracing calculations. How do you add millions of complex ray trace calculations to a scene and somehow tell the hardware to run faster?
That is the genius of their architectural efficiency. DLSS 4.5 isn't actually asking the hardware to calculate and render every single pixel.
Oh, really?
Right. It uses advanced machine learning models to analyze the vector data at the scene, and it predictively generates entirely new frames between the traditionally rendered ones.
So it's filling in the blanks.
It is essentially hallucinating the intermediate frames perfectly by offloading the visual fidelity to an AI model. The actual physical silicon can focus purely on the geometry and the heavy path tracing math.
Wow. And they're even releasing tools for modders to inject this RTX framework into classic games at the engine level.
It's proprietary AI software acting as a massive multiplier for the hardware.
But, and this is a massive but, here is where the global market just got flipped completely upside down.
The Lijuan announcement.
Yes. While NVIDIA is pushing the absolute boundaries of luxury software-driven performance, a Chinese tech firm named Lijuan unveiled a completely new GPU called the G100.
The true 6-nanometer disruptor. I mean, this is the most aggressive challenge to the NVIDIA-AMD duopoly we have seen in over a decade.
The raw specs are just staggering for the price point. The G100 features 16 gigabytes of memory. It runs massive AAA titles natively right out of the box. We're talking Cyberpunk 2077 and Black Myth Wukong.
At max settings.
And they're pricing it at $399.
It's wild.
To put that into perspective for you, a current RTX 4070 sits around $599, and an RX 7700 XT is $449. Lijuan just rolled in and undercut the entire mid-to-high tier with a modern 6-nanometer chip.
You really have to look at the manufacturing economics and the geopolitical statement being made here.
Because of the sanctions.
Well, just achieving a 6-nanometer process node at scale and then actually yielding a consumer-friendly $399 price point is incredibly difficult. Lijuan CEO Li Zhang explicitly stated, China is no longer just a manufacturer, but an innovator.
They're definitely making a statement.
They are capitalizing on the massive, untapped global demographic that has simply been priced out of the RTX ecosystem.
Which loops right back to the counterpoint data on those heavily sanctioned markets we discussed earlier with VR.
Exactly. If you are operating in a region where Western tech is embargoed, restricted, or just artificially inflated by massive black market tariffs, the Lijuan G100 is a highly capable, unrestricted alternative.
It's a lifeline.
It fundamentally shifts the geopolitical balance of compute power. You no longer strictly need an American-designed chip to run heavy modern workloads.
So think about this from a consumer perspective for a second. It is kind of like buying professional camera gear.
How so?
Well, NVIDIA is selling a very good lens,
yeah,
right? But they pair it with this incredible proprietary AI post-processing software that automatically fixes your lighting, fills in the gaps, upscales the image. It's magic.
Right, the DLSS.
Exactly. Lijuan, on the other hand, just rolled up selling a massive, physically flawless piece of raw glass that captures the light natively, and they're doing it for half the price.
That's a great analogy.
So my question for you is this. If Lijuan is offering true 6-nanometer architecture that can brute force a game like Cyberpunk for $399, does NVIDIA's DLSS magic actually matter to the average consumer anymore? Or is raw price to performance just going to win this war?
Well, the proprietary software ecosystem is incredibly sticky. Developers rely heavily on DLSS as a crutch, honestly, to avoid deep manual optimization.
Because it's easier to just let the AI handle it.
Exactly. However, raw compute offered at a massive discount fundamentally threatens that business model. When macroeconomic conditions tighten and a consumer sees a $200 price difference for a card that can still play the game at great settings natively, raw value often wins.
Money talks.
Always. And if the G100 gains enough market share globally, developers will be forced to optimize for raw rasterization again. They simply cannot ignore millions of users on Lijuan hardware. It forces NVIDIA to actually justify the premium of their software lock-in.
Fascinating. So we were watching physical hardware limits get bypassed by the cloud and pricing tiers get dismantled by global competition.
The walls are coming down everywhere.
But, you know, there is a hard physical limit to how small we can make silicon transistors before quantum tunneling just ruins the chip. You can only shrink a nanometer process down so far.
We are hitting the absolute physical limits of classical physics.
Which brings us to the most critical and honestly kind of mind-bending part of last night's data dump. the highest levels of industrial physics are abandoning classical architecture altogether.
Right. The transition into quantum and neuromorphic hybrid systems.
Let's look at the Xanadu and AMD partnership first. They announced the execution of the first hybrid quantum classical simulation for aerospace, specifically targeting computational fluid dynamics, or CFD.
And anyone following aerospace engineering knows that CFD is the ultimate computational bottleneck.
It's the wall everyone hits.
Classical supercomputers literally choke on the fluid dynamics of a rocket engine nozzle or a jet turbine. The sheer volume of turbulence variables is just too high. The Navier-Stokes equations require tracking millions of interacting fluid particles simultaneously.
Right, because classical chips process sequentially. They try to calculate the fluid dynamics of a rocket exhaust plume by basically looking at one particle's interaction at a time.
Which creates a massive system-wide traffic jam of data.
Exactly. Tracking complex turbulence like that can take hours or even days on a massive server farm. But with this new hybrid approach, they're actually slicing the workload in half.
Playing to the strengths of each architecture.
Exactly. AMD processors handle the classical workload, so the standard telemetry, the interface, the linear data organization. But then they offload this specific, highly complex turbulence math directly to Xanadu's quantum computer.
The heavy fluid dynamics.
Right. And the resulting metrics are just wild. Calculations for Boeing, Airbus and SpaceX that used to take days are now resolving in minutes.
Minutes. That is just staggering.
Dr. Christian Weidmeier, Xanadu's CEO, called it a new era of measurable industrial results. This is the exact inflection point where quantum computing stops being a theoretical physics experiment in a university basement somewhere and starts actively dictating how we build physical aerospace hardware.
Because by isolating the specific variables that classical architecture fails at and mapping them to quantum states, they have effectively solved the CFD bottleneck.
Solved it completely. And while quantum is handling the macro physics of aerospace, the MIT research led by Dr. Mike Davies is tackling the energy crisis of computing from an entirely different angle.
Neuromorphic computing.
Yes. They are using neuromorphic computing to solve complex physics equations.
Moving away from the von Neumann architecture entirely.
Exactly, because classical computing relies on that rigid separation between memory and processing. Data has to constantly travel back and forth across the bus, which creates immense heat and consumes massive amounts of power.
It's horribly inefficient.
But these new neuromorphic chips are structurally inspired by the physical architecture of the human brain.
They use what are called spiking neural networks. See, traditional chips use a global clock. Every operation happens on a strict, rigid tick, drawing power, regardless of whether useful work is actually being done.
It's always humming.
Always. But neuromorphic chips have no clock. They are entirely event-driven. Millions of artificial neurons and synapses calculate in parallel, and they only fire when they have specific data to process. Memory and computation are co-located.
It's like reading a book. A standard supercomputer reads word by word, unbelievably fast, but it still has to read every single word in order. But a neuromorphic computer just looks at the whole page and understands it all at once, just like the human brain does.
That's a perfect way to visualize it, and the efficiency gains are almost hard to believe.
The MIT reports detail a complex physics simulation that would normally consume megawatts of power running on a traditional supercomputer. Running that exact same simulation on this neuromorphic architecture took just minutes. And get this, it used the energy equivalent of a single LED light bulb.
An LED bulb. It's almost magical. And if we tie this back to the geopolitical and economic data we discussed with the Lijuan G100 and GeForce and now W, the implications for global research are profound. Think about universities or medical centers in regions with strained, unreliable, or heavily monitored energy grids.
Where you can't just plug in a supercomputer.
Exactly. You cannot run advanced climate models, earthquake predictions, or protein folding algorithms if you don't have the megawatts to power a massive server farm. Neuromorphic architecture completely decouples scientific progress from heavy energy infrastructure.
Wow. But wait, if we look at the Xanadu AMD model, it is explicitly a hybrid approach, right? Classical and quantum working together.
Yes.
So with neuromorphic and quantum systems proving their extreme efficiency, are they going to eventually replace the classical processors in our daily lives entirely? Or will they forever act as like specialized coprocessors meant only for solving massive physics problems?
Well, in the immediate future, they act as specialized coprocessors, much like how a CPU currently hands off specific vector math to a GPU.
Right, they share the load.
Exactly. The classical chip will manage the operating system, and the neuromorphic or quantum chip will execute the heavy parallel physics or AI workloads. But long term, as manufacturing yields improve and our architectural understanding deepens, the boundaries between these architectures will blur completely. They'll eventually be integrated directly onto the same silicon die.
Okay, so what does this actually mean for you listening to this right now? We started this deep dive looking at a massive stack of data from the morning of March 15th, 2026. And the through line connecting all six of these announcements is undeniably clear.
The era of brute forcing performance with massive, power-hungry hardware is officially over.
It's done. Whether you are a gamer trying to run The Witcher 4 without financing a $2,000 rig, an aerospace engineer at SpaceX iterating a new thruster design, or a medical researcher modeling drug interactions on a limited power grid. The friction of the physical hardware just disappeared last night.
It really did.
You were no longer constrained by the physical box sitting in front of you.
And, that leads to a rather profound realization about where these disparate technologies actually intersect.
Wait on me.
While we have seen Microsoft successfully unify fragmented software ecosystems into a single living room architecture with Project Helix, and we have seen MIT prove that silicon can mimic the extreme parallel energy efficiency of the human brain,
Right.
think about what happens when those two isolated trajectories inevitably collide. Imagine a future living room device powered by a brain-inspired neuromorphic chip that uses the electricity of an LED bulb to natively generate entirely new path-traced photorealistic digital universes on the fly.
Oh, wow.
The hardware bottleneck has been entirely dismantled. The only limit left is our imagination.
That is quite the thought to leave on. We like our technological history to happen in neat, predictable increments, you know. Well, consider the line drawn. The predictable slope is completely gone, and the vertical drop has just begun. Seriously, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today. Keep questioning the tech around you, keep looking for that next paradigm shift, and we will catch you on the next one.